I know many of you think the same things I think now as I look around and watch. I've never seen our country in such division. And our willingness to spend money. We worried all my life about the debt, and we don't seem to worry so much anymore. And now it's electronic, and we can add zeros, and there's really nothing there. And you wonder how long that will last. I don't know. It makes me wonder, is prophetic Manasseh of Israel starting to fall, beginning to fall? And we can't tell, and I don't know. I think we do know that Matthew 24:14 is going to happen, that this gospel of the kingdom is going to go to the entire world before the end as a witness. And we know as well that the United States is the economic engine behind that. We're driving that. So we're going to stand until God has decided that the gospel is out as far as it needs to be. And I wonder, when I look at internet, I remember when the intranet first hit our building. At the time I was at the National Institutes of Health, and we got this intranet, and I could send emails to people on the other side of campus, and it was very cool. And before long, it was going further out than that, and I was writing a manuscript with a professor at University of Louisiana. We're on the phone, and I said, you know, I think I can send you this thing by attaching it to an email. So that goes back a ways. We're talking about 30 years back, and it worked. But with this information transfer we have now, and your tablets and your laptops and your iPhones, we are to the whole world. Anyone that has the internet can read the booklet that Mr. Schallenberger was announcing about understanding the Bible. So it's out there, and I wonder for prophetic Israel when it will come, Manasseh of Israel, our country, and how long it will last. And I love this country, and I hate to think about these things, but it does make me think. And as part of that thinking, it brought me to wondering more about the place of safety. And so I've touched now and then in messages with a different focus on a place of safety for God's end time people. I can ask, what is the place of safety? Is there really going to be a place of safety? Who might expect to be there? So as questions I thought maybe we could entertain today. And first I'd ask, why? Why a place of safety anyway? Why would God maybe want something like this? Why would it be needed? And why would God do it? And I thought maybe we could answer in stages as we work up to the end time, meaning the 1260 days, the 42 months, the 3.5 years of the tribulation when God's people might need protection, the final premillennial church. So first question I'd like to ask is, does God have a people who are special to him? And why might we ask that? So I think the reason is, if you're going to protect someone, it would seem to suggest they're highly special to you. And so that's the question I'm asking. Does God make a distinction between those who will obey and listen to him, who are interested for his plan and all that it entails, as opposed to those who won't obey or choose not to, won't listen for whatever reason, cares of the world? And we're coming here and sitting here today with the interest we have. Are there two important different groups of people in the Bible that God is watching? And if we look carefully, we find the entire Bible shows God has a different way of viewing those he calls the righteous versus those he calls the unrighteous. Look in Malachi with me. Malachi in chapter 3. Malachi 3 and verse 16 to 18. And we start seeing some of this distinction here. Those who feared the Lord. So these are God's people we're talking about here. People who revere, respect God. Those who feared the Lord, what do they do? Spoke to one another. That's what we're here for today, as we talk to one another about what God's doing, about the plan, about where we're going, and what does God do. And the Lord listened, and he heard them. So a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and who meditate on his name. Look what God says about these people. They shall be mine. This is the all-powerful God of the universe who is making this declaration. They shall be mine, says the Lord of hosts, on the day that I make them my jewels. And there's a superscript beside jewels in my Bible. When I look at the bottom and it says, literally means special treasure. On the day that I make them my special treasure, and I will spare them. Does that sound kind of like a protection, a place of safety possibly? And I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. Then you shall again discern between. Are there two different groups of people that God talks about throughout the Bible? You shall discern between the righteous and the wicked, between one who serves God, one who comes on the Sabbath day, thinks about God, worships God, and one who does not serve him. Is there a timing when associated with this particular verse? And just look at the next verse in chapter 4. For behold, the day is coming, burning like an oven. So this is an end time setting. All these things we just read about, they shall be mine. They will be my special treasure. I will spare them. And this is one of many, many such verses. God has had in the past, has now, and will have in the future a set apart people who he watches, listens to, and declares here that he will spare them. Verse 17, are these people special to God? Same verse, verse 17, they are my special treasure. Let's look in the New Testament at some names that God gives for his people in 1 Peter. 1 Peter in chapter 2, I think it's comforting to read these things about the way God looks at the people he is calling, the people he's working with. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 6. Therefore is also contained in the scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone, elect, precious. And this is Christ we're talking about. And he who believes on him will by no means be put to shame. Therefore, to you who believe, he is precious. But to those who are disobedient, and we have these two classes of people again that God looks at, to you who believe, he is precious. To those who are disobedient, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone, and a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. They stumble being disobedient to the word to which they were also appointed. Verse 9, but you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. You are his own special people. There are distinct different peoples that God talks about, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness. So we're talking about the truth now, who gave you that light, something that the world just doesn't have, into his marvelous light. Truth and understanding, who once were not a people, but are now the people of God, who had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. So what words does God use for his called out ones here in verse 9? You are chosen. You are a royal priesthood. You are his own special people. This is God. This is the Creator. You are his own special people, a special set apart people. Another name God has for his people, whom he might see as worthy of a place of protection, and which we'll be covering soon as we're approaching the spring holy days. Almost endless meaning in this name. I really like to explore this name sometimes. First fruits. Really, really special name. First fruits and all it means. We're just a couple pages away from James. Look in James 1. James 1 and verse 16. In James writing, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. The way God looks. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights. So this is that truth again. Who gives light, who gives understanding, the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of his own will he brought us forth by the word of truth. And that's what we find in this body, this church, that God has called out the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. A first fruits. The NIV says, a kind of first fruits of all he created. Of all that he created, the New Living Translation says, we out of all creation became his prized possession. For this verse we just read, God calls us his first fruits, which sets us apart from the rest of humanity. More names we could consider. Saint. Saint is a word we find for God's people in the New Testament, which means sacred. It means sacred or set apart. It's used 95 times in the New Testament. You could see this word in Ephesians 2:19 and 1 Corinthians 6:2, other places. More things God calls us. The holy temple of God is another name for God's people, the church, the household of God, the elect. Colossians 3:2, the sealed, 1 Corinthians 1:12, sealed and given his spirit. So the question I was asking, does God have a special people? And as I was thinking about this, I just wrote to myself, listen carefully to these next words. And I said, just from me. But they're really not. They're not from me at all. They're from God's word. You're not like everyone in the world. God calls you the holy temple of God. The holy temple of God. The first point regarding a place of safety, does God have a highly special people to him? Will he view those people the same as everyone else at the beginning of the Great Tribulation? And the answer from his word is no, they will be seen differently. So next question, is God clear that in addition to having a special people, he does intend to protect them? Is he clear about that? He intends to protect them. What does God say about helping those he calls righteous? Let's go back to the Psalms. Book of Psalms, Psalm 34. And most of these that I'm looking at here have an end times setting to them. Psalm 34, verse 17. The righteous, so here we have those different groups of people again. God's talking about the righteous cry out, and the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. Psalm 37. So these are promises from God. Psalm 37 and verse 8. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. That's good advice I need to pay more attention to sometimes. Do not fret. It's not doing you any good. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. We just saw those same two groups of people again. And this setting is, when do God's people inherit the earth? Well, it's the time of the end. They shall inherit the earth. For yet a little while and the wicked shall be no more. Indeed, you will look carefully from his place, and it shall be no more, but the meek shall inherit the earth. So here we have those words again, and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. That's really something to look forward to. There, they shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace at this time that God will bring about. Verse 37 in this same chapter, mark the blameless man. Set him apart, says God. Mark the blameless man and observe the upright, for the future of that man is peace. But the transgressors shall be destroyed altogether. The future of the wicked shall be cut off. But the salvation, so the word means the saving. The salvation, the protection of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in the time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. In the time of trouble, he shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust him. Psalm 50. One more psalm here. Psalm 50, verse 15. God says, call on me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you. Words that we might remember. as we go forward. Call on me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. And there are near endless other similar verses that God will deliver, will help his people. Let's look more at what is clearly the end time. Look in Daniel 12. Daniel 12 and verse 1 in that chapter. Daniel 12, 1, at that time Michael, so this great archangel, shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, stands watch over God's people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, such as never was. We could compare to Matthew 24, 21. These are the same words used as Christ, or by Christ for the time of the end when asked by his disciples. There will be a time of trouble such as never was before up till that time. Continuing in Daniel here, even to that time. And at that time, so we're clearly at the time of the end here. The tribulation, at that time your people shall be delivered. Everyone who is found written in the book. So this is the time of the great tribulation, the 1260 days. And what does God say about delivering his people? They will be delivered. Everyone whose name is written in the book of life. New Living Translation, New American Standard Bible say, your people shall be rescued. Out of this shall be rescued. And what we're reading is specific for the household of God at the time of the great tribulation. For those who are called and given the truth, the sealed, the elect, his church, his special people are the subject. It's a promise of rescue that we can be certain of. So next question that occurred to me as I was doing this, can we see that God has a history of protecting his people? Does he have that history? And again, I can only touch on a few from very many. And these just popped into my mind. Others would have come to you. An early example is righteous Enoch. And I won't turn there. You know the story of Enoch. It's in Genesis 5:24, and he's mentioned in the faith chapter as well, Hebrews 11:5, about whom God says he moved him. He translated him. The word just means moved, so that Enoch wouldn't be killed. And we're not told what the situation was, just that this was a righteous man. And God said, I moved him so that he wouldn't be killed. We know he died later from Hebrews 11 and from Genesis. I think he was 365 years old, if I recall, when that happened. We don't know the situation. It could have been a Cain and Abel situation, someone in his family who was going to kill him. It could have been a bear. We don't know. All we know is that God said, I moved him, a righteous man, a special man to me, to a safe place. To a place of safety for Enoch. Another early righteous figure protected by God in a different type of place of safety. Let's look in Genesis 7. And read about this person. Very, very familiar when we get here. Genesis 7 and verse 1. And the Lord said to Noah, It's time. Come into the ark, you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous. Before me in this generation, we could read about that generation. It's just across the page for me in Genesis 6:5. Again, quite familiar. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And sometimes I feel like I just read about January 2021, almost, as you look around out there and the way we're being. So this is the way it was, and the Lord said to Noah, come into the ark. It's time. This is a place of safety that I told you how to build. I told you how to build, and now you have it, and now it's time to use it. And we know the New Testament tells us about these words and the state of people at the time of the end. I'll just read from Luke 17, 26 to 27, and these are the words of Christ. And as it was in the days of Noah, So I just read what it was like and how people were thinking and acting. So it will also be in the days of the Son of Man, or the second coming of Christ, when Christ needs to return. And how we act and how we just seem to want to party out there. And we ask people not to go out in large groups on New Year's and party and spread viruses and things. But people, I'm going to do my own thing. I will. And this verse in Luke continues, as it was in the days of Noah. They ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage, until the day Noah entered the ark. And the flood came and destroyed them all. So we're talking about as a parallel to the coming time on this age, this coming time. How did Noah know it was time? Well, verse 7:1 again, God told him. God said, Noah, come into the ark. Come into the ark, you and your household. Enter your safe place. For those at the time of the end, whenever it comes, we're not going to need a note from headquarters and ministerial members, e-news issue 500. We're not going to need an email from Mr. Kubik or Dr. Ost. God won't let us be confused or tricked. And I've mentioned before, thinking of this time, I've wondered personally if one or two angels will show up at that time and say, it's time to go. It's time to go, and you'll know that that's the case. But we could look at one like that. How did Lot know to leave Sodom? And Lot certainly had his problems, and it can be comforting too, because he was still called a righteous man, one of God's righteous. Look in Genesis 19. How did Lot know? It was time. Genesis 19, verse 1. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. And Lot saw them. He rose to meet them when he saw them, and he bowed over. He bowed himself with his face toward the ground. Genesis 19:1. I'll skip most of the story here and go to verse 15. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters. It's kind of like Noah's family went with him. So does Lot's family here. I like that, because God's not into breaking up families. Take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. And while he lingered, so Lot wasn't going as fast as he needed, the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. So it came to pass when they had brought them outside that he said, escape for your life from this place. Don't look behind. And this is kind of a thing, don't look back to what you came from in a yearning way. Don't say that I kind of liked it back there. I was comfortable back there. I was okay back there. When it's time to leave, it's time to leave. And you know that we're not part of this world that we live in. Do not look behind you nor stay anywhere on the plain. Escape to the mountains lest you be destroyed. And we know that Lot's wife did look back. That I would kind of like to be back there. Verse 26, but his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. So these two angels took Lot's hand and his wife's hand and his two daughters' hands, and brought them out. This is God's chosen. Lot was spared. What happened to all the others? And we know they perished here. As with Christ, where we read in Luke addressing the great tribulation and how God delivers. How God delivers. It tends to be the last minute, maybe to develop character, patience, have faith, but the message is God does deliver. We could look at lots of other examples. We could go to Paul delivered from prison the night before he was going to be executed by Herod, delivered by angels. Israel delivered from Pharaoh in the Exodus, led by Moses, who was led by Christ, and Moses, who himself was delivered in a basket on the Nile, found by Pharaoh's daughter. We could look in 2 Kings 6. I won't go there, but I just like this one. It describes how God provided an army. The mountain, I'm reading from there, the mountain was full of angels with horses and chariots of fire. And they were there to protect the prophet Elisha and his servants. And his servant had opened the servant's eye when the servant said, "There's more of them than us, and I'm scared." And Elijah said to God, "Will you open his eyes so he can see that he doesn't need to be afraid?" And you could kind of picture, again, I don't know how we flee to the place of safety, but if two angels come and say it's time to go, and you say it's really bad out there, and I'm afraid, and then your eyes are open and you see that angels with horses and chariots of fire are everywhere around, and the angel says to you, "Don't worry, there's more of us than them at this time." We'll see as we get there. But there are many other examples. Daniel was delivered from the lion's den. David from Goliath. Dr. Ross did this just several Sabbaths ago. Gideon and his army with 300, and all they had was trumpets and torches against thousands of Midianites. Jonah in the belly of the great fish, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from Nebuchadnezzar's furnace. But what I'm asking is, has God protected his chosen ones in the past? Is this something he's not only able but intends to do? And if we look time after time, it's a theme of the Bible. If we read and watch for it, God protects. We can be certain that God won't forget us. There's no email, there's no text that you're going to miss that says it's time to go. God will let you know when that time comes. Next question I asked was, will God's people need protection at the time of the end? And for the sake of time, I won't do this. I was going to go to Matthew 24 and read the conditions there as Christ parallels Revelation and the four horsemen and says there's going to be wars. There's going to be trouble. It will be a very difficult time as you read through that chapter. So I'm asking, will God's people need protection at the time of the end? When we read through verses like those, we can be sure that God's church will need protection as we move forward from this time. Let's look more about the promise of a place of safety of this sort for God's end time people. Can he hide us in the coming time of trouble? Look in Zephaniah. So this is one of those minor prophets. It's the fourth to last book of the Old Testament. Zephaniah chapter 2, verses 1 to 3 here. And we're in an end time setting again. "Gather yourselves together, yes, gather together, O undesirable nation, before the decree is issued, or the day passes like chaff, before the Lord's fierce anger comes upon you." Before the day of the Lord's anger comes upon you, O undesirable nation. And now we shift to God's people. "Seek the Lord, all you meek of the earth, who have upheld his justice. Seek righteousness, seek humility. It may be, in that day you will be hidden in this time of trouble, in the day of the Lord's anger." Other translations say it may be that you will be protected, that you will be sheltered, that I will conceal you. The meek of the earth, those who seek righteousness, the elect of God, his people. Drop back to Psalms again, Psalm 27. Maybe we'll see a little more about this protection as we have something described here in Psalm 27 in verse 5. And you see the tone of the verse in the chapter again, for in the time of trouble he shall hide me. And where will that be? In his pavilion. In the secret place of his tabernacle, he shall hide me. These are words for God's people in the time of trouble. And with some honor here, he shall set me high upon a rock. So this pavilion, this tabernacle in the verse has the definition of, I think you're quite familiar, a temporary dwelling. He shall hide me in a temporary dwelling, as in when we leave our homes and live in temporary dwelling places at the feast. In the secret place is also translated under covering. He will hide me under covering. I will be covered in hiding in secrecy in the time of trouble. So do these words sound like a place of safety? And another thought we could have as we go forward, we should always remember that God can provide us a safe place anywhere, as he did with so many others. It could even be in a lion's den. With Daniel, you go stand over there. There's going to be three angels between you and those lions. And the men here can't see them, but the lions can. And they're not going to bother you. Could the place of safety, kind of along that logic, could it be in our homes where we'll each be protected during the tribulation by angels standing at the four corners of our house? And you know, that's a prayer I say every now and then, God, if we need them, if I need them, please put an angel at each corner of this house. Or is it a specific place somewhere else that God intends, a real place? So I'll say more on that in a moment, but I wanted to first address something else that I know is on the minds of many of us, and it should be. In this time, this coming time, will there be martyrs? So I know it's something we think about. Perhaps willing martyrs. Well, let's see. Have there been, were there martyrs in the Old Testament? The Old Covenant people of God, many of them performed mighty works by faith in serving God. And Jewish tradition holds that many of them were martyred. The Old Testament largely doesn't say. However, I won't go there just yet, but we could go back to the Hebrews 11, that faith chapter where it talks about these powerful people of God from the Old Testament. It's in verses 36 to 37 of that chapter. Describes many of these people and says of some of them, they endured mocking and flogging, chains and imprisonment. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. Jesus also said the prophet Zechariah was killed between the temple and the altar. This is when he was criticizing the Jews for not listening to his message at that time. They were killed by your parents. Zechariah was between the altar and the temple. And that's because they didn't like Zechariah's message. And Christ was making the same point to the Jews he was addressing, that like, you don't care for my message. That's in Matthew 23:35. If we go to the New Testament, the first New Testament martyr we know of is John the Baptist, who was martyred. Herod had him in prison because John disapproved of the king's divorce for the purpose of marrying his sister-in-law, the king's sister-in-law, and John was vocal about that. This is Matthew 14, 1-2, and you know the circumstances that resulted. It was Herod's birthday party. And he offered a gift of anything she wanted to his new stepdaughter. And Herodias, the new wife of Herod, told the stepdaughter that she should ask for John the Baptist's head on a platter. Well, we could go to Acts 6 and 7, where we find Stephen boldly preaching the gospel and calling out those who killed Jesus. And for that, he was killed by stoning, and Saul was standing nearby. Think about how that must have weighed on the later mind of Paul, that I did this. I did these things. And yet God said, there's a powerful person there that I can use. Christ's disciple, half-brother James, was killed by King Herod Agrippa I. That's in Acts 12, 1-2. We're told this was by the sword during a time when the king was starting to persecute the church. And persecution will come on God's church again. Herod Agrippa also imprisoned Peter, apparently for the same reason, planned to kill him too. But an angel came and rescued Peter from a locked prison. That's Acts 12, 3-10. And I'm sorry for these words, but it gets better, I think, shortly here. We're not told how Peter died, but tradition again has this was by being martyred. Later, There was a church member in Pergamos, I'm just reviewing the New Testament, named Antipas. I feel like Dr. Ross touched on this individual too not long ago. It's Revelation 12:13, who was martyred, and we're not told why here again, but Revelation does says this person was God's faithful witness. I mentioned Matthew 24 earlier. Verse 9 looks to the time of the tribulation and says God's people will be hated and many will be killed for their faith. Time of the tribulation, Revelation 6, 9 to 10, we see martyrs there who are allegorically or symbolically inquiring of God when their lives will be avenged. And God says these are people who were killed in the past. This is again symbolically like their blood, like the blood of Abel crying out to God from the ground. God says, rest a little longer. They are sleeping the sleep of death. And the last one, I know everyone is familiar with these. God will have two witnesses who will preach the truth for 1,260 days for the tribulation and will be unharmed during that time. They will be untouchable. People won't be able to harm them, but they will be killed by the beast just before the return of Christ. And that's Revelation 11, 7 through 8. So now I want to say, but what about modern members at the time of the end? Will any of us need to be a martyr? And asking this question in parallel with God's promise of a place of safety, I will deliver you, a place of protection. So I know it's a question that we have, and that's why I'm addressing this for his end times church. So now let's do go to Hebrews 11, where I mentioned these powerful people of God and that some of them were killed. Hebrews 11, this is a chapter covering many of God's servants, of select people. And we heard that some of these were killed. I just wanted to look at some of the wording here and consider some of this wording with me, including how these people of God who lost their lives for the faith might have done so. Hebrews 11 and verse 35. Women received their dead raised to life again, and for those killed, others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. So the words I'm interested in is not accepting deliverance. The NIV and several other translations say refusing to be released. So it sounds like these people could have been delivered, but at the moment this came to them, they were so invested in the plan of God. Maybe the NLT, the New Living Translation, says it well. Refusing to turn from God in order to be set free. They're going to stick to their guns. They decided not to hold their peace. Some people, why might this be? And it appears that there are some who will answer to what maybe we would call a higher calling. I don't know, to set an example for God, who choose to say, I'm in this situation and I'm not backing down. I'm not backing down. In this moment that has come to me, I see that I love God too much to do that. Some will choose to not accept deliverance. Is what we're reading here. They were killed, but they chose not to accept deliverance. And their reward, I think it's interesting in this verse, their reward is a better resurrection. And it sounds like the first resurrection, of course, and it is, but we're in the faith chapter here, and everyone here is a first resurrection candidate from all appearances that we're reading about, but some chose to go a step further among God's elect to achieve a better resurrection. It makes me wonder again some about Paul's words where, this is Paul writing here, of course, too, but in 1 Corinthians 15 and 40, where he said there will be different levels of glory in the first resurrection. And here we have some in the faith chapter who didn't accept deliverance and for a better resurrection. I don't know, but it makes you wonder when you look and read through these. Regardless, Satan would like for us to believe we'll all be subject to being unwilling martyrs. The people we've been reading about appear to have been willing martyrs. Satan would prefer that we not trust in our Almighty God's ability to protect and his promise to protect, rather than a few who it appears may have the opportunity for deliverance, but won't take it. Will there be martyrs? Yes, but this may, for the most part at the time of the end, be small numbers courageously serving God as a choice made at that time, at that moment. And with this thought, we could go back to the martyrs of the New Testament I read about. Did John the Baptist know what he was doing? When he criticized people like Herod, did he know the risk he was taking with a very dangerous group? Did Stephen know the same when he was criticizing powerful Jewish people? And yet he elected to do so anyway for God's work, essentially not accepting a deliverance that could have been available to them. Some will. For the church as a whole, if the majority of God's people were to be martyred, the promise we've seen of protection, it wouldn't be true. So the next point I have, and it's a final question, is the place of safety a real place for God's people, for God's end time church? So let's do go to Matthew 24, which I've alluded to but haven't gone to yet. And I want to notice some words here. Matthew 24, this of course is Christ speaking. Almost the whole chapter is in red text. Matthew 24, verse 20. And pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. You know, that verse right there defines the Sabbath as still a different day in a place we haven't quite reached yet, in the future. If the Sabbath is done away with, it really makes no sense and it doesn't matter. Christ says, pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. So the Sabbath really isn't the word I'm focusing on here. The one I'm focusing on is pray that your flight. That word flight, which alludes to travel here in this verse, to going somewhere, to reaching a place of safety. Other translations say, pray that when you flee. So you're not going to stay in your home with angels on four corners. We're going to have to go somewhere. Pray that when you flee, some verses say, your escape. If we're protected in our homes, then there is no flight. So now let's go to Revelation 12. About this future place. Revelation 12. And verse 12. And we're coming to the time of the end again. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. Now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time, times, and half a time. And we know that this is 3.5 years. How do we know those two times in the middle? How do we know that's 2 years and not 3 or 4? And the answer is, we find this same time period 7 times in the Bible. And in some of those, it's 1,260 days. In some, it's 3.5 years. And here, it's a time, times, and half a time. It's the same period of time. It's 3.5 years. We know here that woman is symbolic for God's people, the church, not just a few, the church. This whole group I'm looking at, that's what is being referred to here, the collective body. Most translations say for this word wilderness, or do use this word wilderness that we see here in verse 14, and it has the meaning of a desolate place, a lonesome place is the meaning of that word. And we know what lonesome is. It's when you're by yourself, a lonesome place. The word nourish here means, how does God care for his people? This word nourish, it means to fatten, to pamper, to rear. I kind of like the last one in particular because it sounds like training to rear as we prepare for during these 3.5 years for what's coming in the millennium and the training. The word fly here in verse 14 is one you might find interesting. It's Strong's Greek 4072, and it means to fly. Just as what we see here, just as it's translated, it means up in the air. It makes me think about Enoch when God translated him. I wonder what that means. I wonder how he got from point A to point B. We just know he was moved. One day we can ask him, how did you do that? What kind of trip was that? This word here does mean fly. It might make many of you think about Exodus 19:4, where Israel was carried out of Egypt on eagle's wings. Very familiar to us, but we know they left walking, right? So in Exodus, the words I carried you means to lift, to carry, to take, and have more the concept of being carried or taken out. Exodus doesn't say they were given wings that they might fly, but they were quickly carried out or brought out by God is the sense here for these wings of an eagle. Revelation 12:14 is different from any place else in the Bible. Fly here does come from a word that means fly. As part of fleeing, as part of escaping to a place, to a safe place, a safe spot where the church is fattened, pampered, reared from the presence of the servant. A few last verses here also in Revelation 12, look in verses 3 to 6. Of this chapter, we see more of the same time. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, so we know this is Satan, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and this is Satan's system. And we could go back to Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and we could see Daniel's dream of the beast and the heads and the empires that would go through time all the way up to our time. This is Satan and his system. 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his heads. Following that through history is just a fascinating thing, and it tells you this book we're reading was not written by humans. This is God's book. This Satan, when he rebelled, he talked a third of the angels into rebelling with him. He drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. They were thrown to the earth with Satan. And then the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. And Satan tried to have Herod kill Christ. She bore a male child, and it's clear who this child is, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. So this is after Christ's first coming, and after he completed his mission here on earth, and he allowed himself to be killed. He let himself be sacrificed in our place, and the child was caught up to God and his throne. And his throne, message of Passover. Then we go to the end time. The woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God. So where does the woman, where does the church flee to? This lonesome place where she's alone, where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there is at the same time. 1,260 days. We're seeing here, we saw in Matthew 24:20 that the church will flee. The church will flee, and when it's time, we will know. We'll escape. Angels will be involved. God will be involved, just as he's promised. A place prepared by him, by God, of protection, of feeding, physical and spiritual, in all likelihood, of nourishment, physical and spiritual. The word again means to feed, to pamper, to rear my people when I get them there. I'm interested in it. I'd like to be there. I think it would be all kinds of just exciting. This is a promise from God, and I'll comment in passing. We've viewed this place in the past, this place of safety for those who have been around for a while, as likely being Petra in Jordan, and we don't presently say that that's not the case. It may very well be the place, but now we more tend to say that we're not sure we can make a sufficient case that it has to be Petra. but it really doesn't matter. What's important, we have seen that God will bring his end time church to an actual place prepared by him for his special treasure, for his called out ones, his chosen, his royal priesthood, his elect, the first fruits, his own special set apart people to whom he has given his truth, his church. God will not permit his church to be killed or destroyed. That can't happen. It's not an option, because God has promised a place of safety, of nourishment, of gentle care. This final place of safety, wherever it may be, is a continuation of God's pattern throughout the Bible of showing love, protection, and care, and nurturing for his own special people.